clang, clang.
This film was approved under the Motion Picture Code of Self-Regulation.
And now...
we're thinking in terms of a film. The question is, what are we trying to do with this movie?
By George, that is a good question.
Is everybody happy? And let's go.
You're listening to Film Frown. It's the show, the podcast where we watch a bad movie and review it. Why? Well, if the NSA is going to listen in on every conversation around the world, we're going to make them work for it. Hi, I'm Chris, my quiet friend clicking the refresh on the UPS site, eagerly waiting his Apple Watch, is Paul.
Hi.
And tonight we also have with us a friend and my relative who works in advertising, Steve.
Hello.
And you may remember Steve, this is his second Film Frown show. He was with us last season for The Thing with Two Heads, where he was coming from his office in Chicago.
Tonight I am at a furniture store in a shopping mall with some friends having a kegger. So kind of ironic.
Yeah.
And despite that other movie, I actually came back for season two.
It's because you desperately want to know what happens to the nurses.
Yes, I do.
Reward season's been treating you well, I see, on all my social feeds. You've been posing with rewards.
Yeah, you know, picked up a few for a campaign we did, so very exciting stuff, but... you know, not nearly as good as Chopping Mall, so that should be an award winner.
It's very true. So yes, we. I don't think I have a clever pun for this. We will slice right into this one. There we go. So, Mom, and any other listeners, if you're live, you can join us on the show by clicking below the live feed, and there's a chat room. You can join us and talk to us about the movie, ask us questions. So tonight's film is The Chopping Mall, as Steve said. It's from 1986, which I could not find any other information on Box Office Mojo about whether it did well or not. Wikipedia says it didn't do well when it was first released because it was released under the name Killbots. And they renamed and re-released it as The Chopping Mall shortly thereafter for some reason, which is a way better name. Curiously, this is the same year that Short Circuit came out. The original Killbots came out in March and Short Circuit came out in May.
It's probably a good thing for Killbots because the robot they built for Short Circuit would definitely put these although they did build three robots for this movie. But still, how many did they build for Short Circuit? Like five, right?
Yeah.
And they were all way better than these three. No spoilers involved there. Just believe me.
1986 was also the year that Chris and I went to a video store and talked our grandparents into letting two teenagers rent this and watch it in their basement. So very exciting film.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's not R-rated, Grandma. Don't worry about it.
Yes. Yep. And I swore like that you and I watched this together, but I wasn't totally sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, robots. Like, why wouldn't you watch this?
I mean, yeah. Killer robots, the 80s, a shopping mall. It had everything that we loved back then.
Yeah, and boobs.
Oh, yeah. Those right. two.
Right. And pretty much love all those things now. So.
Yeah. Nothing much has changed.
Right. Except the boobs I've grown. But I was We additionally were supposed to have Sally Ann with us, but she had to cut short notice because she has to travel. And I was kind of bummed because when we watched Dr. Goldfoot and his bikini machine, she was just like totally enjoying like 60s, late 60s San Francisco, like just seeing all these crazy old sites. And so I was like, she's going to have a field day with the 80s.
Yes, true.
Because there's just like stuff in the background and you're like, oh my gosh, I remember that. apparently, this film has a really rare distinction. I also found in my research that the made-for-TV edit actually has more scenes than the theater release. Crazy. Additionally, the version that I have and that I could share for any reviewers is a DVD made from a VHS transfer. Like, the Lionsgate didn't even bother to find the original film to make the DVD. Instead, they used a VHS release from another company whose logo and address appears at the end of the DVD.
Awesome.
The film's producer is Julie Corman, Roger Corman's wife. Every review and thing I read says Roger Corman produced this. I don't know if they're just being rude to Julie or if that was the case and he was just funding this under his wife's name. Who knows? So there's some B-movie love. And every scene like seems to be dressed with old movie posters that I assume are Corman films, like the furniture store back room, the restaurant, the cafeteria in the mall, like everything has these old movie posters that they didn't even bother to take the creases out from the folds. And Paul alluded to it already, but I thought before we actually jump into the film, we should talk about the awesome robots. Paul, how would you describe them?
I would have originally described them as knockoffs of the robot from Short Circuit, but knowing that this movie actually came out before that and was probably in production at the same time gives me even more pause as to the origins and design. They're basically sort of mini tanks. Like, they have tank treads. They sound like they have an actual gasoline motor in them, like a go-kart motor when they're running and moving. Although somehow later in the movie, they manage to sneak up on people. I don't know how that works. And they have a very, they have a completely like silver metallic body. Not quite Dalek shaped, but sort of Dalek sized. And they have this lovely rotating head that has like an all red visor to it, which we then learn shoots lasers, but not always red lasers. Strangely.
I think that's an upgrade on a couple of the versions. You get red laser standard and you could upgrade to blue or yellow.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, the heads, they're like distant relatives to Alpha 5 from the Power Rangers.
Yes, yes.
Not that I remember that. That's really not my generation, but that's all I could think of. Like, ay-yi-yi-yi-yi, I'm going to blow you away.
And I think Wally is like a distant cousin of these robots.
Yeah, I could buy that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. Before we started the show, I walked by like the Roomba and I got kind of apprehensive. So the movie definitely has an effect on me.
I think as long as your Roomba hasn't been struck by lightning, you're probably fine.
Right. I better unplug that. The robots were designed by Robert Short, I think was his name. And he is like, he's a really storied IMDb page, and that's probably because he has a team behind him. Like, in the credits, it says, like, Robert Short Production, so he has his own, like, effects company. But, you know, his company or he, like, in his credits on his page are Star Trek The Motion Picture, E.T., Close Encounters, Splash. Like, there's a lot of stuff, so... I mean, they definitely spent some of the $800,000 budget on these robots.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they're equipped with lasers, tasers, sleeping darts, and explosive materials to blow off doors. I hope I'm not giving away some of the movie, but I mean, these robots are pimped out.
They can handle a lot of different situations. Yeah. Yeah.
Which are not normal situations you would think of in mall security, but they have all of that yeah. for some reason.
that's the other piece that I think is interesting. So the beginning of the film, we get a little like preview movie of basically they're pitching the owners of this mall. They're pitching like the security features of this mall, including these three robots. And they show like a potential break-in, an attacker. The robot kind of intercepts him and then tases him. And
don't tase me, bro.
Don't tase me, Robro. I had that in my notes. I had to use it. But then the other features of this mall, which I find equally interesting, are that every entrance is equipped with these gigantic metallic doors that close like the giant bulkheads of the Death Star, basically. My comment in the notes is that they look more like they're intended to keep things in.
Yeah.
Which may or may not play a role in the movie later on.
Well, and my question is, if you have those blast doors all over the entrances, why do you need to pay for three robots to roam around that look like in the 80s probably cost millions and millions of dollars, require two scientists to run, and a whole computer room on like yeah. the third floor? So you could hire Paul Blart Mall Cop for like $12 an hour and it'd probably just be just as fine.
Yes, I have that in my notes as well. Like, what if you have these like crazy doors? Why do we need the robots?
yeah.
It turns out the entire mall is all Apple stores and they just need to protect the watches.
Because there's all those people in line. So
yeah, right. Right.
So as Paul said, you know, typical horror movie, we start with like the title creep or villain doing his or her evil. And so, yep, we have this scene, which is a movie within a movie, which was great because during their pitch, like when the movie ends and it says the end and it shows the robot, like the film stops, the actual film, they're using like a projector, like an 8mm projector or 16mm projector in the mall with the screen set up. Like, that was crazy. Like, I'm sure we had VCRs in 1986, so I'm not sure why it wasn't on video. So then they introduce this guy from Securitronics who's going to tell us all about the Protector Series 101. And so then my question, of course, became, what happened to Protector Series 100? That could be the better movie. Like, those robots were taught to protect an area. Instead, they just hugged people. I don't know. they became sex bots. So the mall staff is getting introduced to these robots, and part of the audience is Paul and Mary, characters from the 1982 film Eating Raoul. and I have no idea why, what the connection is. Even through all the reading, people are just like, hey, those are the same two characters from that movie Eating Raoul. But there's like, it's not like, oh, this guy directed them too, or any. I don't have no idea why they're there.
They are really annoying. Can I just say, I wish the robots would have killed them. It would have made for a more enjoyable movie because yeah, they're just sitting there being stupid in the audience.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to this a little bit later on, but I feel like the robots are actually the heroes in this movie, personally.
Ah, the anti-hero. Yes. Yeah, they are kind of like, all of us have been in front of crowds and done presentations. And so these two talking under their, yeah, they are annoying for sure. Like, oh, those laser eyes remind me of your mom, that kind of stuff. It's just really bad jokes.
Yeah.
But we get like lots of exposition, which really, even though Steve described all the weapons, we don't really need them because the robots can do all kinds of magical things that weren't told to us. So one of the employees is like, you know, how do the robots tell, you know, us employees from the bad guys? And so then we get a bit of like, you just have to show them your badge and they can scan it or something. And again, you don't even need that because the robots are going to malfunction here in a bit. So we don't need any of this information. But more importantly, as Paul said, we learned the mall seals up with these space age doors at night. And so close up of the sinister robot, and then we get the fun title, which is spelled out in font that looks like the space age doors.
But wait, you got to, right before that, the employees are questioning the safety of these robots. And the guy who's selling them says, trust me, absolutely nothing can go wrong. And then they cut to the chopping mall title.
Yeah, it's like heavy handed for sure. But I mean, it's kind of refreshing because like, you bought a ticket to this movie or you rented it and you know, like it's a slasher film from the title. So it's kind of refreshing that they're just like over the top. And he's like, trust me, nothing can go wrong. Like, yeah.
And then bad 80s electronic music starts playing. It's awesome.
Yes, the soundtrack like over the film is really great. I forgot to look up who did that because it's so fun. It's totally 80s. And we get this like silly montage of mall life. I was totally looking forward to asking Sally about that. But
I love the kid who's skateboarding between the bikini girls. He's like slalom skateboarding between them.
Yes. People are making out. There's a shoplifter, people playing video games, and a lady carrying a tray of full Cokes, avoiding spilling it throughout all the chaos.
That's the most suspenseful part of this whole movie. Is she going to spill them or not? I mean, forget the robots killing people.
Yeah.
Does she make it to her table?
Based purely on the attitude of all the people in this montage, I'm thinking that they might actually deserve to die. But unfortunately, none of the people we see in the montage are actually in the mall later on.
It's true. And the great part about the Coke incident is that she's carrying this tray and like somehow making it through this crowd and not ever dropping it. And she actually gets to the table where all her friends are waiting eagerly for diabetes. And she puts the tray down and nothing goes wrong at that point. What's wrong is that the table isn't bolted to the stand below it.
Yeah, the table just flops over and everybody's soaked with Coke now.
Yeah, I was like, it's not even like her fault or anyone's fault. It's like the broken table in this crap mall.
Yep.
Maybe they should start spending money on the mall and not robots.
Yeah,
okay?
I was going to say, they spent a lot of money on the doors, but the tables...
It couldn't even stop a laser bolt. Come on. And this mall, I think, is like the Sherman Oaks Mall. Anyway, it's the same mall from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So good to know. Trivia, I guess. And as Steve alluded to, we have some bikini babes in this montage. And it's like a really fun play on the famous like roadside Burma Shave campaign with signs every few miles that sort of tie together a campaign. Each of these bathing suit beauties are wearing sashes with a message that ties together and they're just walking through the mall advertising. So I'm sure we'll see that in future campaigns by Steve.
You know, I've already thought of that. We're gonna use it for a few clients, so
and then, you know, Paul, you can try to sell that to MIS, so
sure. Yeah.
But and I was laughing because as I was making that note earlier, I was like, yeah, and the sashes said what? I don't even know, because I'm a pervert. All right, so So now we get to meet our characters. We meet Allison and Susie at the restaurant, and they're not very nice people. That man is just hungry. Don't call him an orca. That's not nice. And so, yeah, 80s girls.
Yeah.
Waitress, more butter, please.
Yeah.
That was the line the guy randomly said. Like, they cut to a scene of the tubby guy sitting after they've introduced the characters. There's no point to it. And he goes, "Waitress, more butter?" And then they cut away from him. It was the most random 5 seconds of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I just remembered to start recording. That's good.
There you go.
Yeah, but the key thing to learn is there's a party tonight after work. And you know what that means, guys? Good times to the max.
To the max. Yeah. Apparently their favorite joke, these two crazy gals' favorite joke, is to just say the same thing at the same time. That's the thing they get the most pleasure out of in this entire movie, is just saying the exact same things at the same time.
Yeah, babe. Yeah, and the one girl, I can't remember her name, the actress, but she's also from like a really fun 80s movie, Night of the Comet. And previously before that, she was in Ryan's Hope, for you soap watchers.
Ah.
It
is so then, babe, right?
So then next we see a technician in the control room, and it's always lightning.
That's right. Why is it always lightning?
It's funny because, like, in the real world, lightning is a bad thing, but it doesn't make your TV want to eat you. It just makes it never work again, or your laptop.
Right.
Or
right. Yeah, but in one movie, lightning gives sentience. In another movie, lightning gives killing death.
And, you know, if you're going to buy all these robots, why would you locate the central computer unit on the top of the building and not put up any lightning rods around it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I understand that all this stuff needs power, but there's something called a surge protector.
It's true.
If you're going to call your robots protector, it's like a dead giveaway that there should be surge in front of them. So the lightning strikes a transformer on the roof of the mall, and hey, what can possibly happen? And our technician is like, hey, that was a crazy noise. The lights kind of flickered, but whatever. I'm going to still do my crossword puzzle.
Right.
Which is great, because I was thinking, like, look how far, like, movies have come, because in the 80s we didn't have cell phones, so we need some sort of busy work. So everyone did crossword puzzles.
That's right. Now they do Sudoku on their iPad.
Yes. If the movie was remade, they would be showing someone, because movies still don't, writers still don't get it, they would be showing someone on their cell phone playing Angry Birds.
Right.
Then he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and put this crossword puzzle down and just grab my porn as you do at work.
Sure.
So then we are treated to kill number one, a metal claw comes through the centerfold and breaks his throat, and blood comes dripping out of his mouth. And so that's kill number one. And of course, they are evil, but they're polite robots.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
So... Every time
that death was very upsetting. I mean, he ripped apart a perfectly good Playboy centerfold.
That's true.
Let's talk about the important thing here with that kill.
The thing that I love is the sound effect that goes along with the chomping of the... Every once in a while, the robots, just as a twitch, will, like, clang their clamps together.
Oh, yeah.
And they just make the loudest, like, clang, 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 every time that they do that. It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's kind of funny, like, as you bring that up, because Was it the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie where, like, the Goblin was the villain and his mouth didn't move, like, in his costume? Yes.
Yeah.
The robots, like, they have nothing on them to animate. Like, the Short Circuit robot has these eyebrows and things that they can do. So it's just, like, to show that the robots are sinister, we get that, like, clanking claw.
Right. Right. And very slowly moving their heads to look at each other in acknowledgement. Even though presumably they have some kind of wireless and can communicate that way.
Yeah. So then we move to get to meet more characters, and we get to meet Ferdy, Mike, and Greg talking about the party in the furniture store they work in. Ferdy is from the TV show Head of the Class. He was also in two of the Karate Kid films. And he's very nervous about this party stuff because he's our token nerd guy. And as the others are trying to convince him that it's going to be good, he's trying desperately to find the fuchsia fabric sample until someone says, like, one of my favorite lines of the film, "Fuck the fuchsia, it's Friday."
During this scene, there's a, in the background, there's a loudspeaker in the mall going off. And if you listen closely to it, I heard it and I was like, wait a second, did they say my name? Yes. And then they say, "Attention, lost child in the lingerie section answering to the name Steve." I was like, all right, I made the film.
I totally had that in my notes too, because I'm like,
oh, yeah?
If you've listened to the podcast before, I have this going theory that 70s films love loudspeakers as background noise. And I was like, it's some carryover into the 80s.
Yep.
And then I was like, hey, he said Steve.
Yeah, Steve in the lingerie section. Ah, so upsetting.
I think I like the introduction of these three characters because it definitely establishes that this is a 100% 80s movie. Every character is a token 80s character. You have the responsible nerd who's nervous about things. You have the former jock, now he's a sales guy. But he's still like trying to be buff, and you've got the overly suave, can convince anybody to do anything guy.
and Mike, our buff guy, he's like hilarious because like he's never stopped chewing gum in this film. I think even after he's dead.
Right.
Yeah.
He's still chewing it.
Yeah. Then we are introduced to a married couple, Rick and Linda, who are headed to the mall bringing the brews. And I don't know, there's some pointless conversation, like maybe we shouldn't go to this party because obviously they're the older people who bought the liquor legally. I'm sure that's what they're trying to establish. And then she's like, fine, I won't need this then. And she throws like some panties and a bra at him that are supposed to be sexy, I guess. But it's the 80s, so... I was just like, did she just throw some big granny panties at him? And then I realized it was the bra and the panties. and finally we meet Leslie as Mike goes to see her and ensure that she's coming to the party and grope her in front of her dad, who owns the store that she's in. We've introduced everyone, so let's just get on with the movie, which I have to say, for an 80s movie, this movie moves really fast, and maybe it's just because I don't watch a lot of slasher flicks, but they're just like, okay, you've got everyone. Let's keep going.
Yeah, yep.
So they cut to Susie and Allison, who are getting ready for the party, I assume, in the mall locker room? I don't know.
I don't remember our mall having a locker room that my friends changed in when they went to work. They went to work in whatever stupid outfit they were working in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look at the director's IMDb page, he made a movie that there's a movie poster, of course, in the background. And then he made this movie. And pretty much since then, it's been 100% skin flicks. So,
oh, yeah.
I think like this might have been his influence. Like, what slasher film does not have like a locker room scene? Come on.
Yeah.
I know it's a period piece, but there's a locker room.
Since you brought it up, the director has quite the list of films. I don't know if you know, you want to pick your favorite. There was Cleavage Field that he went on to do, The Bresford Wives, Bear Wench, and The Witches of Brestwick, and Witches of Brestwick 2, just to name a few. And I think Piranaconda was another one. So,
nice.
Yeah, if you have some time, look up the list of films this director did. You could have a whole season on Jim Wernowski.
And they're numerous. Like, he makes like 8 movies a year or something. Like, his page just goes on and on.
Oh, yeah.
And ridiculously, like, half of those movies that Steve mentioned, like, some of them in parentheses say TV movie, and I'm like, I don't have this channel, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it shouldn't it say video release? And then I'm like, what TV station is he working for? The Playboy channel?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Pay-per-view yes. release only.
Yeah.
Cleavage Field was a TV movie, but he went under the name Salvador Ross as director.
Nice.
I can see why you'd want to change your name for that movie, but not the chopping mall.
Yeah.
So yeah, then we get to see the next shift. A new technician comes into the control room, and he's played by Garrett Graham, who you totally will recognize if you bother to watch the chopping mall, as he's been in loads of television shows. I couldn't really find one that, like, I was like, oh, yes, everyone will remember this. But he's just been in so many shows, like, you know, all the crazy shows that are out there. He's had a bit part, like A-Team and even current shows. The funny thing was, is I just went on his page because I was looking for something to, like, that I didn't find a show or a movie that we'd all know him from, because he's a character player. But ridiculously, like, listed underneath his bio, there's a few more statistics, and then one category that I've never seen before on IMDb, which was salary, and it only had one movie listing, which was this movie, and he made $600 to do the chopping mall. I was like, okay, that's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, after a few teases, one of the robots finally pierces his throat with a grappling hook, another weapon we didn't know they had.
right.
And then we're back to the furniture store where the party's in full swing. White people dancing, making out, that kind of stuff. And it's kind of funny because I'll totally out myself as a nerd, like I have to, because I'm doing a podcast. But I don't think that I've been to many parties where people are dancing and shouting just for no reason, especially when there's like 6 people.
Right. Yeah. It's not a particularly huge party by any means. And it clearly is just a, oh, let's party in a mattress store. There's like 4 couples. It's not really going to be my notes basically say, what kind of party is this exactly?
Yeah, I mean, they have the whole entire store to take over, and yet the couple start shacking up in like beds next to each other. It's like, couldn't you guys spread out a little bit? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah, when we watched Deep Blue Sea, which was playing on the feed before we came on live, there's like 4 to 6 people partying on the boat. And our guest, Jacobs, like, made the point to say, like, one of the person's dialogue was like, it's a party.
Like, right.
It's the same kind of thing going on here. Like, there's just like, we're going to randomly dance and look, we're drinking beer. Like, it's not a party. Nobody's leaning against the wall, hating themselves. let's see. So for the good part is, like, again, the movie takes a chance to make fun of itself because Ferdy and Allison are introduced. And, of course, this isn't before Ferdy does, like, a bunch of ridiculous things in the mirror, like a cliche. And so he's popping his collar and deciding whether or not to wear his glasses. But, you know, in typical movie, like, fashion, it's like kismet when they first meet. So Ferdy's like, hi. And she's like, hi. And then, of course, like, the movie is awesome. And so immediately in the background, like, the two friends, like, mock it.
Right.
So Susie's like to Greg, hi. Yeah. And then they start making out. So it's kind of funny.
But, you know, I mean, you would be excited, too, in the 80s to see a girl with, like, 8 pounds of Aquanet on her hair to hold that head together. I mean, she's got some awesome 80s hair. I mean, that reminded me a lot of high school right there.
Oh, yeah. Those are like some tight curls. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. There's this great party shot, which was like, I just like when I saw it the first time, like there was a voice in my head that said, I'm filmmaking. Because there's like Mike and Leslie, they're just like going at it, like making out as they're supposedly dancing and in a close up. And then as they like pull apart from their kiss, the camera goes right between them to more couples. I was like, right now that director is like high fiving himself.
Right.
Before he goes and takes a Playboy somewhere, high fives himself again. So the robots, they go online. And they head to their assigned levels of the mall.
Yes.
They don't want to confuse us. So, you know, robot one is on level one. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And so then we go back to the party, to the bedroom and couch gallery of the furniture store where everyone is paired off for some hanky panky. Of note, I posted it on Twitter because I was like, that is such ridiculous dialogue. But Greg tells his girl Susie, who's on top of him on the couch, he's like, you smell like pepperoni. So she gets off him and she's like, well, if you're gonna be like that, he's like, no, wait a minute, I like pepperoni. And she's like, oh, in that case. And then she just starts humming and removing her top. But it was just really bizarre to me. Like, she wasn't even like humming, like, you know, the famous stripper song, like, da-da-da-da. She was just like, I was just like, what are you doing? Like, I was like, this is a total turnoff. I like pepperoni and breasts, but I don't like weird humming like classical music. Right. You're taking it out of it.
And admit it, Chris, you tried to use that pickup line on your wife last night.
It's so true. I would if she wasn't a vegetarian, right? you know, and then I just thought of like the other movie that we watched, like that song would make anything better, but she should have been humming O Fortuna. So meanwhile, since they've just met and they're good people, Alice and Ferdy are just watching Attack of the Crab Monsters on a TV, which is of course a Corman film. He offers to take her home, and she tosses her styrofoam cup that's now empty in a can behind her back without even looking. And she's like, I'd like to stay longer. And of course, he's like, whoa, that was a nice shot. And they make out. And I only mention that because there's a callback later to the fact that she's really nice shot. So, yeah, I didn't catch it actually the first time I watched it because I was sort of disinterested. I was like, what movie is that? That looks cool. You should be watching that. So we got to a janitor. What's his name? He's a famous actor, like does a lot of bit parts.
His actor name is Dick Miller.
Yeah. Okay. You've seen him in stuff before. So he's cleaning a mess, and one of the robots approaches him, and he just like basically talks to like a person, which is really surprising for someone with the 80s in technology. And he's like, you know, I got a job to do. Leave me alone. And so the killbot says, identify yourself. And he's like, I got to get to work. You know, he's yelling at the thing. So it shoots a taser at him, but it misses and it just lands on the floor. So he's like, fine. And he goes to show his badge. Uh-oh, too late. It electrocutes the mop water on the floor around him and fries him to death.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Which now you're just like, oh, that was pretty sad. Too bad for that guy. But you don't want to get a lot of time to mourn because we have a bad pun for you. That is because, like, over his smoking body, you hear the character Mike say, smoking is bad for you. And then they cut to Mike, who is in bed with Leslie, and she wants some cigarettes. So he's got to go grab his badge and go out and find some cigarettes for her in a vending machine or possibly get murder death killed.
Well, he does offer her his cigarettes, Camels, but she's like, no, I only smoke Virginia Slims. So then he was forced to go out.
Way to go, Virginia Slims, with your lady branding.
Yeah. So, I mean, this whole movie, all the problems are really Leslie's fault. Let's just say it right there. Her smoking problem causes everything.
Of course, we have to be faked out. It's kind of funny. Like, I don't think that we're desensitized too much to the movie Fake Out. I just don't think that the director did them very well. But one just totally out of the box trick was like a public phone ringing by the vending machines and Mike just answers it because that's what you do when phones ring in the public. And he simply says, no, Jamal, I ain't got no messages for you, and hangs up.
Yeah, I could not figure that out. That's got to be some kind of a reference to something, but I do not get this.
I was wondering, I mean, if it wasn't a reference to something, then he should have just like picked it up and said, waitress, I need more butter.
Right. America's Chopping Mall. We've got fun and games. Click.
And then, of course, prior to Mike's demise, he shows his badge to the robot that snuck up behind him in its gas-powered loud motor tracks. He says a joke from a movie in the 50s, because everyone knows that, which is he shows his badge and says, Klaatu Barada Nictu, the phrase, the turn off the killer robot from the day the earth stood still. But that didn't work. And so the robot corners him. And actually, he shoots him with a sleep dart before he does whatever he does, because the camera cuts away. But each and every one of us knows that.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah, that was very loud, but yes. So then we see Leslie, and she leaves the store because she's looking for Mike, or more importantly, her cigarettes. And then Ferdy and Allison just give us the simple fact that the space age doors close in 15 minutes. So if she wants to leave, then he better help her now. And Leslie finds Mike sitting in the shadows and yells at him because he's obviously screwing around. And so she shakes him and sees his throat is slit. Oh no. And it was kind of a bad bit of makeup too. And she runs screaming because, of course, the robot is still around. And so he's chasing her. And yeah, now's a good time to talk lasers. Sometimes lasers are red and sometimes they're blue or green. And sometimes they make pew pew noises. And sometimes they do like classic ray gun noises like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And lasers are also interesting because sometimes they burn things and sometimes they make people bleed.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes they hit the girl running away in her Playboy underwear right on the Playboy logo if you look closely.
Yeah. I noticed that and I was like, well, that's kind of weird because they have, of course, the exploitive shot of her walking around the mall, which is just her butt, and you get to see the Playboy bunny. And so then, yeah, one of the lasers hits her and you're like, did it like hit the bunny exactly? Like, are they just being lazy so they don't have to put like a laser mark there? Yeah, she manages to get hit a couple of times before, of course, she managed to stop right in front of the furniture store glass windows where everyone is watching because she's screaming. And the robot shoots her in her head. And also, lasers make things explode.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very classy. Exploding head and then blood hits the windows of the store right in front of everyone's faces where they're watching.
I like that this is also the shot that they use for her credit at the end of the movie. Like,
yes.
Did they just not like her? Because they did the classic 80s freeze frame with the name of the actor, and they waited until after her head exploded to do the freeze frame.
Wow.
I was thinking the same thing as you. Like, maybe they didn't like her, but, I mean, it's probably closer to the truth that that's, like, the only scene where, like, the camera is, like, actually focused on her face, where the rest of the scenes it's her butt or her naked boobs.
Right, that's true.
So, I guess like if you want, or like the idea is to like freeze frame on a memorable scene, which is pretty memorable, her head exploding, but they could have done the credits over her naked boobs too. So everyone scrambles and runs to the back of the store, and they lock themselves in a back room. And through some panic, we decide, hey, let's go through the air duct to go to the parking garage. But let's be manly about this. So we'll send the ladies first. And then all of a sudden the guys decide they're going to go, or no, the robots come in, I think. So they can't get into the air duct. So
yeah,
they,
the robots use their explosive putty that they're somehow equipped with as security robots to break down the doors.
That's what it was. Yeah, I remember seeing, like, I was like, man, these robots are like a really bad superhero movie. Like, they have undefined powers.
Because, yeah, right.
Like, 1 second a hand touches a door and then there's some putty there. And I'm like, wait, where did that come from?
Because, I mean, if you're a mall security guard, I always think you should be carrying plastic explosives on you. That's a very key thing.
Yes. So the guys end up running away and they run to the sporting goods store. And, you know, because it's a proper mall, so they have guns and propane tanks. The things in this mall, the stores, they're great.
It's true.
So they get some guns and they decide to grab propane tanks. And then we get this line, which I was like, oh, that's a clever pun. And then I realized that after I heard it a second time that I had it wrong, because somebody like cocks a gun and says, you know, let's send these fuckers a Rambogram.
Yep.
I was like, what? I thought that he said like something about Ram. Let's, you know, I was like, oh, that's clever, kind of.
Sure.
But he said Rambo, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nerd me was disappointed, and Sylvester Stallone fan me was super excited.
I love how the guns in the sporting goods store aren't like locked up or anything. They're like perfectly displayed. It's like, oh, here's a M16 with like five clips. We can just grab this right off the shelf.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. They're right next to fishing poles.
Dynamite next to them for the, you know, when you're really fishing.
Yeah. Right. I need some live bait, an M16, and some dynamite. All right, great.
I should probably go to the mall.
Yeah.
So we find the girls in the air ducts, and I guess it's hot in the air duct. And so that's like a bit of conversation we get and not much else that I remember.
Yeah, they said the computer has control and it turned up the heat because it knows that they're in the air duct, apparently.
That's right.
Which I feel like one thing that probably could have maybe added just a little bit of detail to this movie is if the computer actually used the loudspeakers to talk to the people as they were, you know, going through the mall, just to add like a typical horror, like I'm coming after you and that kind of thing to it.
Ooh, that would have been good.
I think that would have been good, especially if it had been Gene Roddenberry's wife. So it kind of been the anti-role for her.
I was thinking like maybe to give like Hal some more work.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, shoppers. So, of course, we get a tableau of the guys with their weapons walking side by side. That would have been slow motion had the movie been made today. And then the guys run into a robot and they shoot it a lot without affecting it in any way. And since the gun isn't working, Ferdy tosses out the propane tank, perhaps in an homage to Jaws. and the guys probably shoot about 100 more times before it actually blows up. This isn't Michael Bay. This is the 80s. It's low budget Corman. So there is an explosion, but it simply knocks the robot over. But for all intents and purposes, it looks dead.
Yeah.
So no problems there. So they're like, hey, let's go get some more propane tanks. I got an idea.
What I love about this this gun standoff is that for at least 40 seconds of the gun standoff, none of them have moved to find cover. They're just standing straight up, fully facing the robot, and they're just firing straight at it. And somehow, honestly, whoever made this robot should be ashamed that it can't just pick them off with its laser.
We know it hates logos like the Playboy bunny. But
right.
Maybe those guys are wearing logo gear.
Well, and the bad thing about the shooting in this is, like, not only in this scene, but later on, anytime they run into a robot, they start shooting at it. And it's right. Like, haven't you learned after about 15 seconds that these robots can't be shot at? So, and they just continue to go back to that. It's like classic stupid actors in a slasher flick.
Yeah,
everything
yeah.
they do, it's like, why wouldn't you learn from that?
Yeah, and to be fair, like the guys, yeah, they're not very smart, but the girls later on, they seem to learn pretty quickly that their plan won't work.
Yeah.
What I didn't think it would work from the beginning, but we'll get there. So Susie, she can't hack being in the air duct anymore. She's getting a little freaked out. And then she's like, you know, she's totally convinced that her boyfriend needs her. And so she ducks out of the ductwork into the back room of a camping store. And so the girls, here's where I'm confused. The girls decide to make some Molotov cocktails with gas cans, metal gas cans. And I don't think the writers understand how Molotov cocktails work. I think like glass bottles are supposed to break so that the liquid spreads and yeah. Like,
yep.
Hmm.
Well, and you know, the last time I was in a mall, I didn't see a paint store. And the last time I was in a paint store or even a hardware store, they never sell gas cans with the gas in it. They're like, oh, here's some gas cans.
Yeah.
They're fully loaded with gas. We can just stick, you know, a cloth in these and make a cocktail out of it.
Yeah.
I know all the years I worked in retail, like you have to have like a 50-page like book that's just material safety data sheets if you have window cleaner in your store. I can't imagine having gasoline in my store.
Yeah.
So the guys, they've got more propane tanks and they're rigging it up onto an elevator. Meanwhile, we get a shot of the knocked over robot. He pushes himself back up. He's not dead. Uh-oh. And so we go back to the guys working on their plan with the elevator and they hear screaming because it turns out a robot has found the girls. And so they're running and, one of them, probably Allison, slides the flaming gas can, doesn't throw it, slides it. It's heavy, slides it towards the robot. And, now, I mean, I know there's some tension and I shouldn't just like tease listeners like this, but yeah, metal robots don't burn. Big surprise.
Oh man, you ruined it.
I know. Like, yeah. In my day, robots was made out of wood. So Susie, she gets shot in the leg as she's running, and it bleeds because laser, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
And she falls, and uh-oh, the robot rolls up to her and sees that she was carrying a gas can, and the robot is very smart, except he's a bad shot, but he can shoot point blank at a gas can.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah. So we lose Susie.
Usual yeah. 80s person burning in a burning suit.
Right.
Death.
That's so true.
Another hallmark of the 80s.
Yeah. And it's a low budget film. So we get the burning person and then later we sort of have a car chase. The guys grab the girls and they run towards their elevator trap they've been building with the propane tanks. And so Rick, he like sort of jumps in the elevator, jumps up onto the roof and finishes what they're doing with the propane. And then everyone else runs to the next floor. And so the robot's like, well, I'm going to get you. And so he goes into the elevator. And so Rick does this like awesome jump from the roof of the elevator and rolls onto the floor. And so, yay, he's off of there. So now we can start shooting at it. And so again, everyone shoots with their endless 100 bullets ammo trying to hit the tanks when Allison takes Ferdy's pistol and just hits it in one shot.
And nice we shot. Get to hear, yes, we get to hear nice shot at the second time.
Right. And of course, it's because she just simply says, my dad's a Marine.
Yeah, right.
Which, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, I've seen Dirty Harry like at least 40 times.
It's like, you know. It's like that one time, you know, I cut myself as a child and I just turned to Steve and said, please fix this because his dad's a doctor. So obviously he knows how to fix it.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely did.
Yeah. So, you know, we've just destroyed a robot. And now we think we've destroyed two. So it's time to take a break and relax from all the action. Like any good storyteller, you got to put in these little highs and lows. So they're in the restaurant, just hanging out. And for no reason at all, Rick's wife, Linda, says she's got a calculator because 80s. and she's like, if we ever make it out of here alive, we'll pretty much owe them all $2,900,431. That's how much damage she thinks they've done. which is just ridiculous. I was just like, that's so weird. Like, I'm so confused by your character. Your wife, you know how to fix the car. You can do math real well, and you have like a lingerie fetish.
She's the new American woman, Chris. You have to get used to it.
If that was a modern day movie, she would be calculating how much they could win in a lawsuit over these robots.
Yes, right. That is what she should be calculating. Like, okay, yeah. these robots have gone haywire. They've killed two of our friends. They've killed the scientists that are supposed to turn them off, and they've killed a janitor who is probably the only innocent person they've killed so far. So there's got to be some kind of cash out involved here.
Yeah, the therapy bills alone would be millions of dollars.
Yes, obviously.
Yes. You'd be like afraid of robots.
Yeah. You'd also be afraid of steel doors that automatically close.
And the wizardry that is lasers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of these characters can ever have LASIK. I'm sorry.
That's got to be like the most lazy horror film, and I like it, where it's just like a LASIK machine goes crazy. It just has to wait for its victims. So Greg, he's kind of mad at the ladies, because they left the air shaft. He's like, what, you know, you guys are stupid. Why did you do that? You could have got out of here. And so he's not exactly keen on the idea that it was his dead girlfriend's, idea to leave. So he's a little peeved off at everyone, but no worries. There's a new plan, and that plan is going to last like 2 minutes. We're going to get to level 3 and find the master computer to shut down the robots. Well, at least the last one, they think. And so Greg's like, fine. And in his haste, he runs and runs, and everyone's like, slow down. And he runs up an escalator, and there's a robot right there. So he's like, what are you guys waiting for? And then the robot clutches his arm and pretty much throws him over the side.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
So then they're like, oh, crap. And they turn around and there's a robot behind them. That's right. The first one didn't die by a propane explosion. Crazy. I guess you have to drop an elevator on them. So they run to another store, which has like a closed metal accordion door. And, you know, we've got guns, so we'll just shoot the lock. But, you know, we have to create some tension, so it's still stuck. Oh, no. So they open it just enough that everyone can roll under, and Allison gets shot in the arm, and this time it doesn't bleed, it burns. And they close the gate, and they jam it so it can't be raised. And so one robot begins using his laser now for cutting. And the other robot's like, I have to return to my post on level 3 or whatever. Or to head them off. So there's that. And so now the plan's kind of done, even though they've managed to go up to the third level inside the store, because now they're just like all just sort of sitting there defeated. Because they don't know what to do next. And at some point, before they sort of sit down and like say, hey, let's be defeated. Allison's like, hey, maybe we should split up, which is like awesome movie fodder.
Yes.
And even like the people in the movie don't believe it. They're like, no, you're dumb. So they're just resting in front of like the other entrance, but they're just afraid to go out because the door's closed and they can't see. So they have no idea what's out there. But then they hear the robot crash in the door that they left. So he cut through with his laser beam. So then they are like, hey, let's, you know, set up some mannequins to fool a robot if there's one out there on the other side of this door. So they open the door and there's like 5 or 6 mannequins and the rest of them just standing in a row. Again, like Paul says, let's forget cover.
Right.
Let's just hope that it shoots the mannequins.
Whatever you do, stand still and out in the open.
Yeah.
And the girls run off, and then the guys, like, they go forward with the plan they had. They're like, let's knock the mannequins down to expose the mirrors. Yes, that's right. Mirrors, everybody. So, thanks to some curious geometry and physics, a laser beam bounces off one of the mirrors and hits the robot, which makes him go a little crazy with like electricity all around him. And so, but he's not dead. He's throwing up all of his arms and spinning. And so he's still shooting too, you know, because he's a little crazy right now. So everyone's still in danger. And unfortunately, Rick got separated from everyone else, so Linda can't, you know, stand that. And so as she's, like, shouting for him, she, of course, gets shot by one of those errant laser blasts.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah. So, so you know, Rick is kind of ticked off because, like, you know, we've seen it before in this film. When you kill someone's girl who you've been with on a couch in a furniture store, it upsets you a great deal. And so he jumps on one of these like utility golf carts and he drives right into the spinning robot. And apparently that's an effective way to kill a robot in our car chase for our 80s movie. It explodes and Rick gets electrocuted and I believe he is also gone.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah. So propane tanks will not explode. These indestructible robots, golf cart crash will.
Yeah. The science of the whole movie is questionable, but at least they don't bother to try to explain it to you.
That's very true. So Allison and Ferdy are left to find the control room. So let's go back to Allison's plan of splitting up. Sigh. So we get some fake outs in the dark as Allison's looking through like these sort of back of store doors and things like that.
Did you notice behind those doors, like she opens it up and to freak you out, they have like all sorts of like metal car parts and random pieces. I'm like, what mall is storing crap like that in a storage area? I don't even know a mall that has a storage area like that and has like leftover metal pieces and mufflers and all sorts of other crap she finds in there.
Yeah, it was like the props truck door she opened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy. Like the only thing we're really missing in this scene is like, and I even wrote it down in my notes, like, oh, Chris is funny. I'm gonna write this down. And then of course later on we get to a pet store in the mall. But I was like, there needs to be a pet store so a cat can run in front of her and she freak it out. And then later she goes into a pet store. I'm like, damn it. They thought of everything.
And they just didn't execute it very well.
Right. And Allison is like totally great for this because she's been jumping for everything. Like even the attack of the crab monster movie, like she was like,
yeah. Ah!
Like, so she's good for faking you out. I just think 80s music, it doesn't lend you to the fake out because you're too busy jamming.
Sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, after all the fake outs, a robot does find her. So let's see, Ferdy, like she screams for Ferdy and he like runs to her rescue, gets his attention. So it spins its head around and he pretty much shoots it point blank in the laser eye, which of course does very little damage, except the robot says laser malfunction. So now it can't like just shoot whatever crazy laser it feels like. But it still has grappling hooks and darts and plastic explosives.
Right.
But still, it decides to chase Ferdy down with its arms. And so he grabs a fire extinguisher and pointlessly throws it at the robot. And Killbot is like, oh, dude, like, that sucks, man. So he picks it up and throws it back at Ferdy, which sends him flying backwards pretty crazily. And his head is seen bleeding on the concrete floor because he probably hit it pretty hard.
Those are really powerful plastic toy claws. I mean, metal claws right. that yep. is throwing that.
Clang.
Clang. Clang, clang, clang.
Yeah, they honestly, like, for the listeners, the claws pretty much look exactly like Steve and my grandma actually had one of these because she was rather short. But, like, it's like a little grippy thing so that you can reach higher shelves.
Yeah.
It looks like those. So anyway, Allison, she runs to a pet store, like I had mentioned, and she hides under a shelf. And unfortunately, the robot follows her and he knocks over a few aquariums. So now she's hiding under a shelf when tarantulas and snakes are running all over the floor. Honestly, like, one of the coolest parts of this movie is the fact that, like, as the old Hollywood adage goes, you don't ever want to work with, like, pets and children or animals and children on film. And so you have, like, I don't know, four or five tarantulas running around, and they just, like, throw two snakes in there. And the snakes are, like, doing their thing, like, winding around the floor. And as they do that, like, the snake hits, like, two or three tarantulas and sends them flying. I just couldn't get over that. I was like, that's pretty funny. That snake is like, oh, what the heck's going on? So as the tarantulas and snakes are crawling all around her, the robot finally gives up. So for once, she doesn't, like, squeak as she always does, even though there's things crawling all over her. And she gets away, but she doesn't know where to go. So she's just sort of standing around when, like, she actually has good hearing and is able to hear, like, the outboard motor of the robots. So she sort of hangs off one of the railings between floors as the robot is driving around looking for her. And unfortunately, she doesn't have the upper body strength. And I can't fault her. I don't either. And so she falls through, like, an awning on the next floor. And she looks like she hit something pretty hard, actually. So she limps away. And as Steve mentioned, she breaks into the paint store at the mall. Always got a paint store in the mall. and she remembers, hey, I stuck a flare in my bra earlier in the camping store. I could use this to signal traffic. So she opens a bunch of paint cans and spills them all over. And then she yells for the killbot and hides behind the wall. And the robot comes in and he's looking for her, but now he can't get traction on all that crazy paint. So she runs out and she lights the fuse and she just simply says, have a nice day. As we've been doing it.
Nice.
And she throws it and boom. And apparently she's knocked backwards and she finds, like, a broken claw next to her. So then she sort of crawls away and eventually stands up and limps. And she looks up to see Ferdy with a roll of bloody toilet paper on the back of his head. And they both smile. And I'm thinking, like, where the hell were you? I would not be smiling at you right now.
I just want to say her hair still looks perfect because she's still got, like, those 20 cans of Aquanet in totally. It. So hasn't moved an inch despite having to fall two floors, kill a robot, and, you know, talk in an echo voice. And she still looks perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, and so he runs down and they embrace, and then the camera, like, pans skyward, and there we have it. End of the movie and credits, and as Paul said, we get the feature shots of everyone and their names, and then the credits roll, and then even though it's the 80s, it's not like Marvel invented it. The movie has like a scene at the end where it's just a robot who drives right up to the camera and does his
thing. Thank you. Have a nice day.
And I was like, well, that was cool, I guess, if you did a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the film. It was kind of fun because it's 80s for sure.
Oh, yeah. Malls, yeah. Boobs, you know, drinking, robots, guns. I mean, it had everything.
Go-karts passing for cars in a car chase.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the only thing we needed were like the authorities to like show up. Like just like the, you know, the cameo of someone famous, like
the Hoff
or something like that. What's happened here? Yeah. So what do you think? Is it so bad that it's good, or is it just kind of bad?
I would say it's so bad it's good, and it's got some valuable lessons that smoking kills.
Yep, smoking is bad.
Yeah.
Robots should not be trusted.
Teenage parties will lead to trouble.
Yep, will lead to trouble. Specifically, salesmen that sell robots and tell you nothing can go wrong should definitely not be trusted.
Yep.
Right. I would go with that. You know, it's kind of vulgar, but I pretty much think it's also a life lesson, which is fuchsia.
True. Sure.
I mean, I think it's so bad it's good for the simple fact that, you know, we've been living with technology for so long in our lives that I think in the early 70s and 80s it was hard to get people to understand that machines were just machines. They just wanted to, like, the janitor talk to them like the regular people, and they don't understand that they're just like commands, like go and do this. And so here the robots prove otherwise because they're magical. They have all sorts of powers we don't even know about.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
One of the powers I forgot to mention is that as Paul had said that these robots are on basically tank tracks. And I would say that they are the size of like three or four people, probably.
Yeah.
And for no explainable reason, one of the robots comes to attack people up one of the escalators.
Yeah, somehow he fits and rides up an escalator. And he's totally upright as well. Like they don't try to make it look like he went like he's climbing the escalator at a 45 degree angle or anything like that. He just looks like somehow he's standing on one of those steps.
Yes.
It reminds me, if you go to like IKEA, they got like the escalator for the shopping carts to push him up and down, and it's like he's riding on one of those. Of course, those came like 20 years after this film.
Yeah, but yeah.
I was like, oh, that's what he's doing. And I was like, wait a second, this is the 80s. We didn't have that.
Exactly. Yeah, that was like, I forgot about that scene. I was like, what's going on? How are you even, that doesn't, okay.
Irony of ironies, the escalator got hit by lightning as well and hates robots. My tank tread is caught. Oh no, what am I? Ah!
So yeah, Paul, what about you? What do you think of it?
It's definitely bad. I don't know if I put it in so bad that it's good. I don't know that I'd necessarily watch it again, but I think if somebody was interested in a bad robots turn evil movie, I could suggest this one.
Yeah, I'm on the fence. Like I included on the list because I think the last time I ever saw it was with Steve in the 80s. So I was like, with that kind of a title, it's definitely edging on bad. Well, let's see if it's good.
Yeah. It does have a lot of very trope characters, and the robots themselves are actually pretty respectable for in terms of, you know, being able to move around, the amount of puppeteering they're able to do with like the arms and stuff like that. And some of the scenes I was actually fairly impressed with, although I admit that I'm watching a fairly low resolution copy. So if maybe there's a higher definition version of this, you could see the puppeteering for what it is, but it worked fairly well for me from a like special effects standpoint, and you know, from being from the 80s as well.
Yeah, I think I think it does fit in the so bad it's good category, because I think one of the issues that happens when you produce a podcast like this one is you just like, oh, I gotta watch the movie.
Yeah.
And so you pull it up and you watch it and you take notes, where I think in the case of like, is this movie so bad it's good? If you get together with like five other friends of yours and you decide you want to watch a bad movie, you're going to have a fun time watching this movie, unless you're doing it in a furniture store in a mall that's run by security robots.
And the airlocks have sealed.
Right. But yeah, I think if you watch this with a group of people, you'll definitely enjoy yourself, because it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Tina was having fun up until she fell asleep at some point. But I think at the point where the first time one of the main characters takes their top off, I think it's the humming no particular discernible song moment. She's like, oh, I didn't know that this was going to happen in this movie. It kind of became a different movie to her suddenly.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is that although we had seen the pornography a little bit earlier than that, it was so poorly lit, you couldn't really see what was going on with it either. So,
yeah, it was exploitive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there was really, I mean, the motivation was like, hey, we're partying, let's get busy. But yeah, it was 80s movies were just like, hey, this sells.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a slasher flick. You got to have some boobs before people start dying. It's
That's kind of like required. That's true. Yeah.
You know? You don't have a sex scene and before people are killed, it kind of ruins the 80s slasher flick.
Yeah, you can't do it afterwards, or then all of us will need some therapy.
So I did think these robots are very respectable, because we did forget to mention that the robot drives by the window of the furniture store and sees all the kids partying in there and decides to wait until at least we get some booby action before he decides to kill anyone. So,
yeah. And he did, like, one of the robots did shoot a Playboy logo. So you could say these are conservative robots. And as Paul said, they are the heroes. They're like, these are some no good kids.
Right. Yep. Right.
up to sexual deviance and God knows what. I'm going to destroy them. yeah. So 1986. I had it open, so I just thought I'd mention before we stop. Like I said, I couldn't find a lot of information on this movie's box office, which isn't pertinent, but 1986 was another one of those like crazy years. So the top movies, I can just list like a few, but wow. Top Gun, Platoon, The Karate Kid Part 2, Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home, The Golden Child, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Stand By Me. So like there's a lot of crazy things, like all the movies that came out that year, like Short Circuit is listed 21.
Wow.
Wow.
And Short Circuit is above Pretty in Pink. And just below Pretty in Pink at 23 is The Fly. And at 24 is Three Amigos. Like this is a crazy year.
That's
for
a pretty
movies.
Packed movie season. Yeah.
Yeah. So crazy. So, like I said, I didn't see the chopping mall anywhere on there, but I just looked at the top 100. So yeah,
I feel like Short Circuit is a better So Bad It's Good movie personally, but maybe that's not bad enough to be in that category.
Johnny Five is alive.
It's true.
I was gonna say that when the robots got shot, I forgot. Yep. And then Fisher Stevens, he's in Short Circuit for whatever reason, playing an Indian computer guy. But he's Fisher Stevens.
Ah.
I just remember because him and Steve Guttenberg were supposed to be total nerds and they didn't know how to drive the truck. And
right.
So they're driving around town and like Fisher Stevens like reaches over and like turns the lights on and he's like, you know what? Many people are legging at night lights. I don't know why that line is in my head, but there you go. So yeah, Paul is recommending that you should watch Short Circuit.
I am. I'll own that. I'll own that. You should watch Short Circuit. It's a good movie.
I also see Crocodile Dundee is from that year. So
yeah, I failed to mention that. I'm sorry. It's number two. Makes me sad.
Call that a robot?
This is a robot. Yeah.
That's a robot.
Yeah. So, Steve, do you have any recommendations?
I think you mentioned it earlier, and it comes from that era. But I think if you want to watch another movie that's a non-slasher flick but gives you that mall culture, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, that's what this reminded me of. And I know you said it's from the same mall, but that's what I'll go ahead and recommend. Just because I was reliving my mall days of the 80s, you know. Going to pick up a cassette tape to play in the car before prom, you know, all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah. I thought you were going to say Night of the Comet. I was going to be like, oh, wow. It's interesting because Night of the Comet stars the girl who plays Allison in this movie, but also the other person in that movie is Commander Chakotay from Star Trek Voyager.
Ooh.
And I thought that was kind of like when I was like remembering that movie, I was like, hey, was that? No, couldn't have been. Are you serious?
He's got to have a better character in that movie.
Yes. Yes. I will go ahead and safely say that he in fact does.
Yeah.
He was in something else. I don't know why I'm stuck on this now, but I am because I was like, what? I don't remember that. And I shouldn't be wasting show time trying to find that.
I just want to point out this podcast has lasted longer than the actual shopping mall movie did.
Nice. Sorry about that. It's true. It is a short movie, so that's a good thing. Oh, that's what it was. Commander Chakotay is in Eating Raoul, the movie that we mentioned earlier.
Yes.
That those two characters are from, yeah. Which I saw when I was younger, and I remember thinking it was an interesting black comedy, but that might end up on our bad movie list, especially with those two characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool. I guess we should probably sign off so that all of us can get on with our lives, including you, the listeners. Thanks, everyone, for listening and live and those of you who are downloading listening. So Steve is, last time I think he said you can contact him through me. No, wait, you did mention you have a Twitter account if people wanted to bother you or follow you, right?
Yep. Yeah. He tagged me in that one. So at CPT Carl.
Nice. I am at Sick Days, SIKKDAYS on Twitter. You can find me there or just go to sickdays.me and find other places where you can find me.
And you can find me on Twitter as well. I am at Paul D. Or you can also go to padizio.com, padizio.com.
And next week we are not here with Film Frown, but back with Montreal Sauce. We're chatting with Jacob Cook of ArcOS. And he's been on the show before, but I was inspired to chat with him again because I've been writing a lot of pieces about privacy lately. So thought he'd be a good guest and we could have like a show focusing on sort of online privacy issues and things like that. So if you've got questions, send them to the Montreal Sauce Twitter account or join us next week. Tune in next Thursday. The following Thursday, Film Frown is back, and the three of us, I believe, are back. Also, possibly Sally, if she's back, and Arden will be with us. And we are watching Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, a childhood favorite. But I've included it on our bad movie watching list because I'm pretty certain it's not going to hold up.
Awesome.
So, again, thanks to everyone for tuning in. I know I've had fun. Thanks again, Steve, for joining us. It's been
thanks
fun.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Sweet. All right. So, normally I do the Buckaroo Banzai line to sign off wherever you are. There you are. But, I mean, I think our friends should sign off tonight. So, good night, everyone.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie. Thank you for coming out to the drive-in tonight. As you leave, please drive carefully and come back soon. Please replace the speaker on its rack when you're ready to leave. Failure to do so will damage both the speaker and your car. We'll be grateful, and so will the patrons who follow you.